That was my daughter-in-law who brought me the mic. I'm happy about that. Dear Lord, I ask you to speak to us. Speak to me. Bring blessing and truth and freedom, release from whatever encumbers, and cause what we do here today and our thoughts, our secret things and the open things, that all of it, Lord, would give you glory, that you would bring rest to whatever is unsettled in the hearts of your children. And use me however you like. Yeshua's name. Amen. Have you ever heard a voice that said, "Here, eat this, because the journey is too great for you"? Let me give you a little free advice. It's a really good thing to avoid getting too tired. I'm deathly serious. It's a good thing to avoid getting too tired, because when you get too tired, you don't think as well, and your emotions become less stable, and your body becomes less stable, and your spirit, which is integrated with your whole person, is also affected by you getting too tired, too disoriented, poorly fed, too little sleep, too little water. Have you ever noticed what a narrow band of existence or life, whatever you want to call it, human beings live within? It's pretty narrow. Temperature. You can't live very long above a certain temperature. Can't live very long below a certain temperature. You can go a while without water, but not real long. You can go longer without food, but, you know, you get weak. And there are verses about, you know, essentially prayers to God. Don't give me too little, so I don't, you know, like become a thief or get so angry that I curse you. Don't give me all the stuff I want, because, hey, if I had all that, I'd probably get careless and just love it so much that I forget all about you. But give me what's just right, so that I won't leave the bounds of the grace that you gave for me to walk in. So I'd suggest get enough sleep. Eat well. Don't eat too much and don't eat too little. Get some rest aside from just sleeping. Go someplace and clear your head out. Let everything stop for a little while. Now, the Buddhists know that letting everything between your ears stop is the hardest part. Right, Dean? And I don't know, maybe everybody knows that. One way is to try to empty yourself until there's nothing there. I would suggest don't ever try that. Because nature and the spiritual world abhor a vacuum. And if you empty yourself, there are things that are going to try to come in. So I would suggest not doing that. But take a break. Have a cup of tea. I actually think it's good to be nice to yourself. Eat right, get some sleep, take a break. Try not to be too busy, and don't be idle. Well, I'm going to read you a passage you all know. Starting in Romans chapter 7. I find then the principle that evil is present in me, the one who wants to do good. For I joyfully concur with the law of God in the inner man, but I see a different law in the members of my body, waging war against the law of my mind and making me a prisoner of the law of sin, which is in my members. Wretched man that I am, who will set me free from the body of this death? Thanks be to God through Yeshua the Messiah, our Lord. So then, on the one hand, I myself, with my mind, am serving the law of God, but on the other, with my flesh, the law of sin. Is that what you're doing? See, with your mind are you serving the law of God, and with your flesh the law of sin? Is that what you're doing? Are you holy in your head but unholy in your body? Is that unfortunately it continues. Therefore, there is now no condemnation for those who are in Messiah Yeshua. Well, that is a good thing. I always find any day without condemnation is better. It's almost like Anita Bryant used to say about Florida orange juice, you know. What was the slogan? Day without orange juice. It's like a day without sunshine. For some reason, I just saw a video of her having a pie smashed in her face by somebody flashed through my head, and I can't remember why they did that. Oh. Ah, it fits. So, there's no condemnation for those who are in Messiah Yeshua. So, does that mean you can serve the law of sin in your flesh, and there's no condemnation for it? What does it mean? Does God wink at sin? I want to ask you, is there anything in you that needs to go? Is there anything left in you that doesn't belong in you? Anything that you hate that you can't seem to peel free of, or anything that you love that you don't want to let go of? Or perhaps at the same time that you love it and don't want to let go of it, you hate it and wish you could get rid of it? Because see, human beings are bundles of contradictions, so much so that they don't even know half the time when they're contradicting themselves. I know, because I'm a human being. I have a lot of experience with this. Lest you think I'm talking about you. Well, I am talking about you. But I'm talking about all of us. So, I think that the things that need to go can go. I think they can go. I don't think the scriptures give us great hope to not go to hell, but not hope of purifying ourselves and being purified while we're on this earth during this age. I don't think they describe people that went through the wash machine of redemption and finally are clean when they're dead. What do you think? You know, I'm sometimes very distracted by people saying things while I'm speaking, but even so, sometimes I like people to say things. Like, I mean, even insult me. Like one guy called me a mumbling Swede one time, and some other stuff. And I think that was distracting, but something about that day, though, galvanized me. Things became very clear in my head. And about the time he appeared to be ready to punch me, some others came, I guess, kind of to my defense. It was a good feeling to know that when a demoniac comes in and mocks and then wants to clock you, that there's somebody that will actually step in besides just God himself. It's a nice feeling. So because you're not saying anything, I now lost my train of thought because I'm commenting on you being so quiet. So it's your fault. I just wanted to see if you could catch me in the kind of thing you do all the time. And you did. So you have no excuse, you who think you are without this. So, for the law of the Spirit of life in Messiah Yeshua has set you free from the law of sin of death. So, see, this actually says we have been set free from the law of sin and death. For what the law could not do... What couldn't the law do, by the way? Anybody know? Well, it's God's law. I mean, it's good. The scriptures call it good. They even say the law of the Lord restores a soul, stuff like that. The law is and was perfect, but people aren't. So the law, if the law shows just exactly what we're really like, it proves to us that we can't redeem ourselves, it proves to us that we can't save ourselves, it proves to us that we really cannot ever at all solve the problem of humanity, which is not the sins that you committed, but the sin nature that is in humanity. And by the way, if you keep concentrating on the sins that you committed without thinking about the nature of sin that is in the flesh, you'll probably never quite get all the way clear on what it is you're struggling with, because it's not so much particulars that are the issue. That's why it really doesn't matter if a person is a lesbian or a homosexual or a murderer or an adulteress or a prostitute or whatever it is. I mean, does it matter? Yes. But not nearly as much as we think. Because stopping being any one of those things saves nobody from anything. It's completely irrelevant. So when, as a young pietist, I thought things about people who smoked cigarettes, it's fine to think about them, but it's very troublesome to think the kind of thoughts that I sometimes had go through my head about people that smoked cigarettes. Because the funny thing is, I found out fairly early, fortunately, that you could smoke cigarettes and be a redeemed person. I found out that you could smoke cigarettes and actually be a better disciple of Yeshua than, well, maybe me. Or all kinds of other people who didn't do the list of things that you don't do if you're part of the Swedish Covenant Church. But I can't find a verse anywhere that says, if you don't do these things, you are righteous and God will accept you. I can't find it any place. There are people who smoke that are quite righteous in the eyes of God. It may kill them. It may not have any effect on them at all. Some of it's genetic. I might have said too much about smoking, but the point is, it isn't as big a deal as some people make it. And neither are the really big things that are so terrible. Because I gotta say that the nature of your own heart or the condition of it with respect to people that do really, really super terrible things, I mean like the really bad sins, unlike the ones you've committed, like, I mean the really bad ones. What you have in your heart about that subject will define a great deal about you and whether or not you can be like Yeshua to those people. He could say really hard things to people, but it wasn't because he despised them and hated their guts and was just offended by them. He told them the truth. He'd be very gentle. He could be very firm. He could say stuff that seemed very insulting. Seemed. But the only thing that Yeshua ever insults is, well, the realm of darkness and fallen human nature. He does not does not offend anything else. I don't think. So, at any rate, I should probably go on with this. For the law of the Spirit of life in Messiah Yeshua has set you free from the law of sin and of death. For what the law could not do, weak as it was through the flesh, God did, sending his own Son in the likeness of sinful flesh as an offering for sin. He condemned sin in the flesh, so that the requirement of the law might be fulfilled in us who do not walk according to the flesh, but according to the Spirit. Oh, so here it says us. Are we us here? We're the us. We are inside of this us, right? Okay, so the requirement of the law might be fulfilled in us. I think the easiest way to say what the requirement of the law was is that we had to die. According to the law, we had to die. And Yeshua died in our place. Is it Paul that says, wait, no. Is it Yeshua? Oh, I've got my head mixed up. Somebody might die for a righteous man. Perhaps. What?
Paul.
Somebody, some persons might die for a righteous man. But even if they did, I mean, it wouldn't save anybody, right? So that the requirement of the law might be fulfilled in us who do not walk according to the flesh, but according to the Spirit. So this says that us walking according to the Spirit are us. Is us. I know it didn't work. I gave it a try. Walking according to the Spirit. That's a description of those that the righteous requirement of the law has been fulfilled in. They don't walk according to the flesh, but walk according to the Spirit. So if there is anything in you that you're aware needs to go, this sounds an awful lot to me like it's possible that it can go. When I think about the blood of Yeshua, I always think, you know, I remember slogans, you know, shout it out, you know, the stain. I can't remember all of them now, but there are all kinds of products that have a claim of getting, you know, getting all the stains, all the dirt and everything out. OxyClean. Is that the one that guy shouts so loud about? Just yells all the way through the commercial. I mean, I admire the energy. You must eat well to be able to keep doing that. And, you know, there's Mr. Clean. I mean, he really gets stuff clean. Mm-hmm. And he's muscly, too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And very handsome for a bald guy. He's bald, right?
Yeah.
I mean, bald can be okay. And convenient, actually. Just think how little time it takes to wash your hair. So, this really sounds to me like it's talking about the blood of Yeshua really getting things clean. Really clean. And then, also, because he conquered sin and death, and rose up out of the grave and gave us a new life, that it's made it possible for us to walk according to the Spirit, not according to the flesh. You know, there are people that would probably come to God if they just knew the way. And how will they find out the way? By hearing. But how will they hear without a preacher? And you're the preacher. And I've always found that it's way, way better to really believe what I believe when I'm preaching to somebody else about salvation than to not be so sure. You ever run into a salesman that says, well, I really want the commission and I want to make the money? I mean, the product's not so great, but hey, I'm a great guy and please open your wallet and buy this. Right? No, they have to be a better liar than that, or they have to have a really good thing to sell and really believe in it. And I have met people who believe in what they're selling. And it's interesting to watch somebody that really believes in what they're selling going through the whole thing without lying at all. For those who are according to the flesh set their minds on the things of the flesh. Okay, so we're learning here, aren't we? If you have come to the Lord, It sounds like it's a good idea not to set your mind on the things of the flesh. So stop it. If you're doing it, stop. Okay? Just stop it! If you don't know where that came from, look up the Bob Newhart video about the woman that he told to just stop it. It's a very good study in how not to express God's compassion to people. So, for those who are according to the flesh set their minds on the things of the flesh, but those who are according to the Spirit, the things of the Spirit. For the mind set on the flesh, is death. The mind set on the flesh is death. But the mind set on the Spirit is life and what? And? Yes. My daughter-in-law said it first. It looked like it. I'll give you credit for it. Okay, Dad, I'll give you credit. For the mind set on the flesh is death, but the mind set on the Spirit is life and peace. Have you ever lacked peace? I found that when I lack peace, I'm not very peaceful. I mean, sometimes it's like, it's nothing at all like peace when I lack peace. I can be so disturbed that it almost seems like something in me doesn't even want peace, or forgot about it so terribly that doesn't remember that there is such a thing. It's not a very good state to be in, and it's definitely not peaceful to be without peace. So, for the mindset on the flesh is death, but the mindset on the Spirit is life and peace. So, if we set our minds on the things of the flesh, it is death, it's of death, it's not good. But if we set our mind on the Spirit, it's life and peace. I'm getting the impression that will bring anybody to peace about anything. Anything. Which is really good news, because anything happens to us. And when anything happens to us, it's really good to know that we can set our mind on the things of the Spirit and be at peace. You think? Because the mindset on the flesh is hostile toward God. You ever find anything in you that seems, it's like it's a mystery. Like, I'm feeling kind of hostile toward, could that be I'm feeling hostile toward God? Something in me feels hostile toward God. That ever happened to you? The mindset on the flesh is hostile toward God, for it does not subject itself to the law of God, for it is not even able to do so. And those who are in the flesh cannot please God. But Yeshua has made us pleasing to God, right? So we must not be those who are in the flesh. However, you are not in the flesh. You are not in the flesh, but in the Spirit. If indeed the Spirit of God dwells in you. But if anyone does not have the Spirit of Messiah, he does not belong to him. Seems pretty clear. If Messiah is in you, though the body is dead because of sin, yet the Spirit is alive because of righteousness. But if the Spirit of him who raised Yeshua from the dead dwells in you, he who raised Messiah Yeshua from the dead will also give life to your mortal bodies. Now, the way I read that is in this age and in the age to come. I don't see it as a reference only to something after the resurrection. Other people may see it differently. If it means anything, Dan Jester and I agree on that one. But I am not God, nor is he, so it doesn't prove anything. God proves his own word, and he doesn't really need any help. So then, brethren, we are under obligation not to the flesh to live according to the flesh. That's good news, isn't it? You are not under obligation to be stuck in whatever the thing is that needs to go. There's no obligation. None. You aren't stuck with it. It doesn't have the right to mess up the microphone or anything else in your life. It's good to learn not to take yourself too seriously, by the way. There was a time when I would have been so embarrassed by that. And probably also by having a pair of glasses that are glued together with a gob of JB Weld. But not anymore. Okay, so where was I? However, you are not in the flesh, but in the Spirit, if indeed the Spirit of God dwells in you. But if anyone does not have the Spirit of Messiah, he does not belong to him. If Messiah is in you, though the body is dead because of sin, yet the Spirit is alive because of righteousness. But if the Spirit of him who raised Yeshua from the dead dwells in you, he who raised Messiah Yeshua from the dead will also give life to your mortal bodies through his Spirit who dwells in you. So then, brethren, we are under obligation not to the flesh to live according to the flesh. No obligation. There is no obligation to sin. There is no obligation to have lust. There is no obligation to steal or to be involved in any sort of sexual immorality. There isn't an obligation to dwell on sexual immorality in your mind, and there is no obligation to perform it with your body. There's no obligation to look at stuff that fans the flames of that. There's just no obligation to be involved in sin whatsoever. The obligation to sin is gone. You used to be part of the kingdom of darkness, but not anymore. So the things that don't please God do not have to stay. They don't have to be there causing you to feel condemned or look down on yourself because there's no provision to be free from them. Because, you know what, there is a provision to be free from them. And a person can gain control over their own spirit, and they can gain control over their own body, and they can learn to control even their thoughts, which may not mean that every thought all the time is completely controlled, but see, sometimes something happens in front of me, or somebody says something, and this thought comes, it's just right there. But you know what? I can go, oh, that's a thought. I'm not going to think that one. I'm not thinking that thought. I'm going to think this thought. It doesn't control me. I don't have to do the thing that I wish I wasn't doing. I don't have to live with the shame of having secret sins that I wish I could get rid of, that I also partly really want to hang on to. I don't have to. I'm not obligated. There is no obligation to sin. There's no obligation to continue in bad habits that make you ashamed of yourself, that make you feel unworthy, that make you kick yourself around, and that at the same time, you actually do want to engage in them. But there's no obligation to stay that way. None. There isn't anything there's no part of the sinful nature that will go with you to glory. Did you know that? None. Is there anything about your own person that you don't think God wants to take into glory? Anything? I'm not asking you to dredge up something. I am asking you to give some thought to the things the Lord's been trying to put his finger on for the last week or month or 10 years or 50 years or however long. I'm asking you to take your finger and put it on there along with God's finger. Point at it along with him, and then declare that freedom is actually freedom. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there's liberty. That you're not under obligation to continue in the thing you wanted to stop a long time ago, but part of you wants to continue with. But that God has put his finger on. That's all I'm talking about. You know what it is. And one of the great things about God is that when he puts his finger on that, and you know he knows, and he already knew, he always knew. I mean, that's the one of the things. He knows anyway, even when he's not talking to you about it, he already knows. But when you see God the way he actually is, you don't go hide behind the bushes in the garden, scared stiff of him. You just go rushing before the throne of grace to receive mercy. Grace and mercy in time of need. Just go rushing right in there because he loves you. And so there is no obligation to have yourself stricken by fear and shame because of sin, because Messiah has dealt with that. So you can just go right there to him with it. For if you are living according to the flesh, you must die. But if by the Spirit you are putting to death the deeds of the body, you will live. For all who are being led by the Spirit of God, these are children of God. For you have not received a spirit of slavery leading to fear again, but you have received a spirit of adoption as sons, by which we cry out, Abba, Father. The Spirit himself testifies with our spirit that we are children of God. And if children, heirs. Heirs also, heirs of God and fellow heirs with Messiah. If indeed we suffer with him, so that we may also be glorified with him. Oh, this is good news. Suffering's part of life. We don't have to try to live a life with no suffering. It's very frustrating, actually, to try to live a life with no suffering. Because it's not possible. But it is possible to suffer for things for a purpose instead of just suffer because we continue in the stuff we're stuck in. And it is very different, actually, to suffer for a purpose than it is to just suffer because of your own error. It's very different. In fact, sometimes it's rather satisfying to suffer for an actual purpose in Messiah. And there can be joy in that suffering. But the suffering from our own stuff that we cling to, there's no joy in that. For I consider that the suffering of this present sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that is to be revealed to us. For the anxious longing of the creation waits eagerly for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself also will be set free from its slavery to corruption into the freedom of the glory of the children of God. The creation itself is going to be set free into the freedom that we've been set free into. We're already in that freedom. It only gets better from there. For we know that the whole creation groans and suffers the pains of childbirth together until now. And not only this, but also we ourselves, having the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, waiting eagerly for our adoption as children, the redemption of our body. For in hope we have been saved. But hope that is seen is not hope, for who hopes for what he already sees? But if we hope for what we do not see, with perseverance we wait eagerly for it. The Torah portion talks about taking vengeance on the Midianites. And it also says that if you let things remain, Numbers 33. But if you do not drive out the inhabitants of the land before you, those you allow to remain will become barbs in your eyeballs and thorns stuck in your side. And they will harass you in the land where you settle. And then I will do to you what I had planned to do to them. Oh, man. That's just terrifying, isn't it? So, I want to tell you how to kill the Midianites. Or at least suggest that you do. So the way I think of Midianites today, it's like, you know, I read a passage, I think, how do I apply that? I'm going to go kill some Midianites. And the scriptures say our battle isn't against flesh and blood. So if there are any Midianites, I don't think, at least not at this point in history, and I'm not about to engage in the conquest of the land of Israel, I'm not supposed to go kill the Midianites. But I do find that what I let remain in myself that doesn't belong there is a Midianite. And it becomes a barb in my eyeball and a thorn in my side if I let it remain there. So I should first, the first conquest is to kill all the Midianites within. Every last one, even that really cute, shapely one that twinkles at you and that you bat your eyelashes back at. Yeah, kill that one. Kill that one first and then just see if there are any left. It's easier to kill the other ones once you kill the one you love so much that you really just want to marry her. So kill the Midianites. And if you don't, well, I just want to suggest, if there's anything in your life that seems like a barb in your eyeball or a thorn in your side that just keeps bugging you, that you're angry about, that you're grumpy about, that you're just all twisted up about, maybe it's just you just need to kill it. And when it's dead, it will be gone. And there's grace to do it. Because we've been given power by the atonement and the resurrection through the blood and the Spirit poured out to kill the Midianites. To avenge ourselves upon evil and avenge God's name by doing what's right. And it's so striking to me. You can look up the name Balaam and see how many times it comes up, but there's the way of Balaam mentioned, and the teaching of Balaam mentioned, and the error of Balaam, and in Jude and 2 Peter, it talks about those things. And so whatever Balaam is all about, it's still in the world now. And people who have come to faith in Yeshua get tempted by it and warned against it. And in the case of the Midianites, it was sexual stuff that was used to get Israel to become displeasing to God in order to try to defeat them. And I dare say that there's never been a time in human history when all kinds of sexual rot is flowing like hot and cold running water on every street corner and in every phone and on every television and in every quick stop and gas station. It's just every place. And sin is sin. But I'm not sure if there is any subject that is so effective in putting shame on people and hampering them and shackling them and getting them all knotted up than stuff connected to sex. It's the strongest drive in human beings, and it sure messed up King David. And you can be very messed up between the ears without even engaging in any actual sin. Let's see, what's actual sin? Oh no, actual sin is what happens between your ears. And then the other stuff that's committed outside from not just between your ears, it comes from what's between your ears. It's generated by what's going on in the mind. The battle is in the mind. It isn't against your own body. Not against other flesh and blood. It's in your mind, in your spirit. That's where the battle is. It's where it's won and it's lost. So, anyway, I'm about out of time, and this is a miracle. I'm going to stop at about 1:30 or 1:31. I really want to encourage you to believe that the blood of Yeshua actually does wash human beings clean. That freedom, which has been given to us, is actually freedom. And that it's possible to learn to actually walk in freedom and have peace and a clear conscience. And the more we practice it and the more we live in that, the more astoundingly convincing we will be to people that really need to find out the truth that we have. We should really live in it. Demonstrate it. God has demonstrated it to us and made it possible for us to follow Yeshua and do as he did. And the scriptures actually say, as he is, so are you in this world. Wow, that is, it has to be true, see, because God said it. I love that about the scripture. If the scripture says it, ask you to help us listen to you. Just give grace to us all, Lord, to come to you in faith and let you help us with whatever offends and fill us with your love, that it would go forth and do the work of the gospel. In Yeshua's name.